There is an amazing story told in a number of sources about Rabbi Akiva Eiger. And the story about Rabbi Akiva Eiger goes as follows, that there was once a Sefer Torah that was found on the side of a highway somewhere. Nobody really knew what the origin of the Sefer Torah was. Nobody knew where it came from, who wrote it. And they came to ask Rabbi Akiva Eiger the question, is this a Sefer Torah that we should assume is a kosher Sefer Torah, or is it something that we should assume perhaps is unacceptable? Now, what does it mean that a Sefer Torah could be unacceptable? If it has all the letters, if it has all the words, and it has all the parshios, what can possibly be wrong with it? So the answer to that is, in Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Sefer Torah, Siman Resh Pei Aleph, we're told, if you have a Sefer Torah that looks like a Sefer Torah, smells like a Sefer Torah, and has everything that would make a kosher Sefer Torah, but yet it was written by a min, it was written by someone who doesn't believe in God, or it was written by a non-Jew, who obviously is not able to write a Sefer Torah on our behalf. So the Shulchan Aruch paskins that you have to either be gonez the Sefer Torah, you have to either bury it, or in some cases, yisarif. In some cases, you burn it, which is an uncomfortable thing to do, because you have something that looks exactly like the properties of a Sefer Torah, and yet you take that item, and you burn it. So the question that they put before Rabbi Akiva Eiger in the 1800s was, should we assume that this Sefer Torah that we have found and know nothing about its whereabouts, about its origin, should we assume that it's written by a Jew who is a believer in God and therefore we should keep it, we should donate it to the shul, or should we assume that it is unacceptable and maybe it was written by somebody who doesn't believe and therefore it should be burnt? And Rabbi Akiva Eiger was wondering, how is he going to answer the question? He doesn't have Ruach HaKodesh, he's not a Navi. How is he supposed to know who wrote the Sefer Torah and whether or not it should be kept or perhaps it should be burnt? And Rabbi Akiva Eiger answered the following. It's a powerful answer because it shows us how powerful Minhagim are and how much we follow Minhagim, even sometimes when it means paskining a Shaila based off of a Minhag. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger said the following. He said, I'd like you to look at the very end of the Sefer Torah to notice whether or not the last few lines are written in a straight form, if everything is exactly symmetrical with the rest of the way the Sefer Torah has been written, or perhaps is it written a little bit crooked. Why is that? Because he said the practice all over the world is for many, many hundreds of years that when we have a Sefer Torah that's being completed, we bring it to the city, we leave the last few sentences of the Sefer Torah blank, and we allow members of the community to contribute. We allow members of the community to fill in a letter. Well, said Rabbi Akiva Eiger, it's impossible for everybody to fill it in exactly the way the Sofer wrote the rest of the Torah. So if, said Rabbi Akiva Eiger, if you notice that it's crooked, then we know that this Sefer Torah is kosher, and we have the right to keep it. And if you see that the letters are straight and everything is symmetrical, he said that is a clear indication that obviously the Sefer Torah was written by somebody who is not a Jew or somebody who is not a believer in God. And therefore, he said the only way it could be straight is if the Sofer wrote it by himself, which is not the minhag of our communities. And therefore, he said, Ye ganez o ye sarif. We have a right even to burn a Sefer Torah based on this assumption, which is an amazing story. It's an amazing story because it shows how seriously we need to take minhagim. And it shows that if there's a community that hasn't followed a minhag, sometimes it could even bring us to paskin a shayla and perhaps even to burn a Sefer Torah based off of our understanding of that minhag. That was the psak that Rabbi Akiva Eiger gave in that generation. I don't know what the end of the story was, but he was ready to burn a Sefer Torah based on his assumption, which is an amazing story. So the Ramah writes, I know we're up to Chodesh Av now, but it's almost Chodesh Elul. We start to think about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So the Ramah writes in Hilchos Yom Kippur, Tzimun Tuf Resh Yud Tes, when he discusses the halachos of Yamim Noraim. So the Ramah is talking in the 1500s, and he says, Al Yishana Ana Miminag Ha'ir. Do not change any of them in Hagim. Afilu B'nigunim, he says, even in the tunes that the community is accustomed to using during the davening of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, don't think that you have a right to come along and change everything and say, we have to modernize everything. The minhagim were there for a very particular reason. And the reason why we have this tune at this part of davening and that tune at the other part of davening came from a very holy place. And the Ramah really there is not saying something in his own name. He's quoting from the Maharil, who was the father of Minhagei Ashkenaz, came in the 1300s, but much of the Ramah's Psakim on Arachayim are based off of the Maharil, and the Maharil there writes that he once came to a community, he was asked to be the chazan for Yom Noraim, and he decided, let's spice it up a little bit, let's change this tune over here, let's change that tune over there, let's say these piyutim and not those piyutim. He started changing everything around, and it was for good reason. It was because the Maharil believed he was doing the right thing. And the Maharil writes about himself, which is a frightening story. I don't know exactly what to make of it, but the Maharil writes about himself. I'm not saying this to scare anyone, but he says, Liyamim, I realize that I made a tremendous mistake, and I should not have done what I did, and writes the Maharil, I'm reading from the Minhagi Maharil. He says, a number of days later, Mesa Bas Harav B'Yom HaKippurim. On Rosh Hashanah, he says, I changed all the piyutim, and I did this instead of that, and I decided I was going to do it my way, because I felt that's the proper way, even though it was against the minhag of the city. And the Maharil said that a number of days later, only Yom Kippur, it's 10 days later, his daughter died. V'hitzdik harav haniskar alav. He said the reason why he feels that this happened, why was he deserving of such a punishment, was because he decided to play around with them and hug him. Now again, how do you make sense of that story? Why is it that the daughter deserves to die just because the father changed the minhag? I don't know, it's a story for a different time. But the point is that we take minhagim very, very seriously, as troubling as that story might be. The Aruch HaShulchan in the 1800s, Rabbi Chiel Michel Epstein, writes a interesting passage as well. Any Kohanim in the room? You're a Kohen, right? So the Kohanim, as we know, have an obligation to Duchen every day. Nesias Kapayim is a mitzvah that the Torah describes we're supposed to be done all the time. And the Gemara goes on to tell us that not only do they have one obligation to Duchen, but they have multiple mitzvahs HaTorah that obligate a Kohen to Duchen every day. And yet we know, we all live in Chutz Laretz, and we don't do the mitzvah of Nesias Kapayim every day. We reserve it for the Yamim Tovim, for the Chagim. And that's a very strange practice. You go to Eretz Yisrael, and they seem to be doing it the right way. Eretz Yisrael, they duchen every day, and we have the opportunity to get the blessings every day from the Kohanim, so why is it here in Chutz Laretz that we do not? So the Ramah says, perhaps the reason why is because the Gemara says that a Kohen is only allowed to duchen when he's in a good mood. And therefore, says the Ramah, on Yom Tif, we're all going to be in a good mood, but during the regular course of events during the year, we all have Daigas HaParnasa. We're all worried about our business, about our work, about our money, and therefore we assume a Kohen's not going to have the full concentration that he's supposed to have if he duchens in Chutz Laretz. So Rabbi Ram Shapiro once quipped to my father, and he said, well, what about in Eretz Yisrael? He said, in Eretz Yisrael, we don't have these problems. Nobody works here. So obviously it's not the right answer. We have to figure out a better reason why it is in Eretz Yisrael they duchen every day, and here they don't. And this is something that has troubled many, many great gedolim until this time. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes, Vihine. Between me and you, says the Aruch HaShulchan, let's be honest. He can give all the excuses in the world and come up with all the reasons, but vaday ein shum tam nachon leminhagenu. We don't really have a good justification as to why it is that there is no Nesias Kapayim in Chutz Laretz every day. We don't really know the defense. We don't know the rationale. It's hard to really explain why that is the case. We've been mevatel mitzvah sase de birchas kohanim kol hashana kula. We reserve it for 5 days a year, for 10 days a year. That's it. What about the mitzvah, the obligation that we have every day? And he says the truth is, mina garuahu. It's the wrong practice. We should not be following this practice, says the Aruch HaShulchan. And really, we should be reinstituting the old practice of the way it's supposed to be done, that a Kohen should do Nesias Kapayim every day, whether he's in Chutz Laretz or in Eretz Yisrael. That is what the Torah describes as being the mitzvah. However, he says, aval ma nase. What can I do? As much as I don't understand it, as much as it makes no sense in my opinion, aval ma nase, what can I do? Ki ilu bas kol yatsa. It's as if a heavenly voice came out and told us, shelo lahaniach lanu lisa kapayim mechal hashana kula. It's as if a heavenly voice came out and told us that we have no right to do Nesias Kapayim and Chutz Laretz every day. What's this heavenly voice that he's referring to? What's the story? So he doesn't explain it. But if you look in the Netziv, he has a tshuva in the Meshiv Dover. The Netziv was also from the same family as the Aruch HaShulchan. So the Netziv, living in the end of the 1800s, also writes a tshuva about what this supposed bas kol is. What's the story here? He says, Achrini Sheshamati Kimeduma. He says, I heard from Rabbi Itzel of Alajner, who is a relative of his as well. Shepamachas, that one time in his generation, he was a student of the Vilna Gaon. Hiskim Rabbeinu Hagra Lahanig Nesias Kapayim B'chol Yom Bebeis Medrosho. The Vilna Gaon lived in Vilna. Obviously, that was in Chutz Laretz. And they had the practice that they don't do Nesias Kapayim except if it's Yom Tov. Now, the Vilna Gaon realized there's something very wrong about this practice. It doesn't really make sense. So the Vilna Gaon advocated that tomorrow we're going to have the opportunity, we're going to change the practice in our town, and all the Kohanim should come on time to davening, we're going to do Nesias Kapayim. Vilna Gaon hangs up the signs, and he's very much looking forward to this, and he says, Ikvuhu min hashamayim. That night, it seems that the Vilna Gaon was stopped in his tracks. They didn't allow him to go through with a plan. What happened? Nilkach lebesa asurim. That night, the Vilna Gaon was arrested. Be'es hamachlokes hanarab be'vilna lo'aleinu. So, the Vilna Gaon was unsuccessful in his attempt to reestablish the old practice of doing Nesias Kapayim every day. Okay, so the Vilna Gaon wasn't successful. Who was the star disciple of the Vilna Gaon? Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner. Chaim Volozhiner says, look, it didn't work out for him, But the Vilna Gaon was right. He was right that we really should not keep the old minhag of being mevatel the mitzvah of nesias kapayim every day. Let me try it myself. So Reb Chaim Voloshiner decides after the passing of the Vilna Gaon, I'm going to try it again. Writes the Netziv. Hiski mi hung up signs in his town in Voloshin biyom echad shebiyom hamachras yitzav elisa kapayim. Reb Chaim Voloshiner goes around, hangs up pashkevilim all over Voloshin, and he lets everybody know tomorrow all the kohanim should come to shul and they're going to be ready because we're going to do nesias kapayim. But also halayla that night after he hung the signs up, Nisraf Chatzi Ha'ir Ubeis HaKnesset Sheba'ir, writes the Netziv, half of the city burnt down, including the shul, says the Netziv, also was part of that terrible catastrophe. V'rov v'hisbonenu. The Netziv says, here we had two great tzaddikim, the Vilna Gaon and Reb Chaim Voloshiner, who both tried to do the same thing, but, says the Netziv, they were both trying to break the minhag of all of Klal Yisrael. The minhag Yisrael is in Chutz Laretz, not all of Klal Yisrael, the Sfardim do it in Chutz Laretz as well, it's a mistake, but Minhag Ashkenaz generally is that we follow the Ramah, that we don't do Nesias Kapayim and Chutz Laretz. It doesn't make sense to us. Really, there's no real justification, there's no real rationale. But the answer is, the Minhag is the Minhag. Even if it might not make sense to you, even if you don't think there's a real justification, Al Pi Halacha, this is what we do. And the Vilna Gaon learned that you shouldn't play around with the Minhagim, and Reb Chaim Voloshiner learned the same as well. If you look through the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch, you'll find many, many times that the Ramah tries very much to uphold the institution of Minhagim. And so often the Ramah writes, V'hachi Nahaginan, V'chein Nohagim. So many different times the Ramah says, this is the practice in Germany, this is what Ashkenazic Jewry does. So I saw a story, I always wondered why it is that the Ramah puts such an emphasis and such a focus on Minhagim. Where does it come from? So I once saw a story that explained the background to this issue. And this story is taken from the Sefer Lev HaIvri. I was reminded about it yesterday. I spoke about this years ago, but I was reminded about it yesterday because Rabbi Mati Neuberger from the White Shul said he had once heard me telling over the story, and he also wanted to say it over because it's a very amusing story. So the story goes that in the days of the Ramah himself, in the 1500s in Krakow, the Ramah comes to his community to be the rabbi, and one of his first days on the job, he hears something very, very strange. The Gabbai gets up to do the Kriyas HaTorah, and he's calling up all the people who are taking aliyos. And after he calls somebody up, he hears that they make a public announcement of Mazel Tov to a man whose wife had a baby. And they say, last night your wife went to the mikveh, and we want to wish her a big Mazel Tov, that now she's Tahora, now she's allowed to come back home and be with her husband. And the Ramah said, it's such a strange minhag. What do we announce in public that the woman went to the mikveh last night? Why is this something that's appropriate for a shul, and why is it anyone else's business in the community? So the Ramah said, you know what? That's the end of that. I don't know what this minhag is all about, but we're going to abolish the minhag. When a person has a baby, we'll wish them a mazel tov after they have the baby. And there's no reason to announce on the evening that the woman goes to the mikveh. There's no reason to talk about it then. Fine. So the Ramah lets everybody know that we're no longer going to do this, and we're going to just revert back to normalcy. That's what the Ramah decided. Just so happens to be, when the Ramah made this decree, when he made this change in the community, there was one man who was on business and was not home at the time. So he didn't know that they got rid of this. Just so happens to be his wife also had a baby. Comes back a couple of weeks later, and his wife goes to the mikveh, comes to shul the next morning, and he's waiting for his aliyah. And the gabbai doesn't go over to him. The gabbai doesn't give him the aliyah. And the gabbai doesn't give him the mishaberech and the mazel tov and the whole whatever they used to do for a person who had a baby. So he gets all angry, pulls over the gabbai to the side, starts yelling at him. He says, how dare you? I always knew you didn't like me. You always skip over me for everything else. Now I see you really skip over me. My wife had a baby. Last night she went to the mikveh, and she came home and she was tahora, and you're only choosing that you're not going to wish mazel tov to me? This is what we do for everyone. So the gabbai pulls him aside. He says, I have two comments for you. Number one, I'd like you to know that a few weeks ago when the Ramah came to town, he decided to abolish the custom, to abolish the minhag of announcing in public. After all, he thought it was inappropriate. Why should we announce this to the entire shul? Number two, he says, I'd like you to know, my wife is in charge of the mikveh. I have a ledger of who came last night and who didn't. I'd like you to know your wife told you that she went to the mikveh, but she never did. So the Ramah said he understood from that that he made such a mistake. You don't play with him and hug him. And look what happened, says the Ramah. I made a mistake. I played around with him and hug him, and I decided, I thought it made sense. We should do it differently. This is the way the community in Krakow always acted. But he said, this was a way of deterring a woman from lying to her husband because she knew the next morning we would catch her in a lie. And the Ramah said, we're going to go back to the old practice. And I read in a sefer, Lev HaIvri, which is a sefer of Rabbi Kiva Yosef Schlesinger, one of the great tzaddikim in Yerushalayim, that Rabbi Kiva Yosef Schlesinger said this is why the Rama went out of his way so often to emphasize the importance of minhagim. He wrote so often in Arachayim, v'hachi na'aginan v'chein ha'minog, because he said he learned what happens, the catastrophic course of events that can come about if you choose to neglect minhagim and you choose to play around with them and not follow the way the community has always been following the minhag, as much as you have a justification and a rationale sometimes to abolish a minhag. The Rama felt that it was inappropriate what he himself had done, and that is why he gave such a strong emphasis in Shulchan Aruch. The reason why I mention this, and we'll stop with this, but the reason why I mention it this week in particular is because the Chasam Sofer and many others write that the whole source of minhagim is from a pasuk in our parsha where it says, Lo yachel devaro. If somebody takes something upon themselves, I say I'm never going to eat potato chips again, or I say I'm never going to eat this again or that again, I have a right to take a nether upon myself and make anything forbidden for me to consume or to eat or to have benefit from. And from there we learn that's the power of a minhag, that a community has a right to take upon themselves, that they're going to wait 6 hours between meat and milk, or they're going to do all kinds of different practices, different things, but the binding orientation of a minhag and why it is that we all have to keep it is because we learn in this week's parsha, Lo yachel devaro, once we take something upon ourselves, we don't have a right any longer to go back on our word, and once we've taken something upon ourselves as a community, the same rules of nedarim would apply to all of us as well, and we don't have a right to abolish what it is that we've taken upon ourselves earlier.